For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. November the 9th, we are in Parshas Tetzaveh. We're on page 476. Last time we read through verse 12. We were discussing the fact that all of these karbanos, all these sacrifices that are being mentioned here, are aberrations of what the normal, quote-unquote normal, karbanos are. And we talked about last time how it's very difficult to appreciate the differences without knowing what the typical way of bringing a karban is. This being the Shiva Simei HaMiluim, the 7 days of inaugurating the Mishkan and inaugurating Aaron and his sons as Kohanim, you have a funny situation in which Moshe is the acting Kohen, Aaron and his sons are being initiated as Kohanim, they are also the Bailim, they're also the owners of these Karbanos, and the Karbanos themselves have slightly different rules than they normally do. So last time we discussed a chatas, an ola, a shlamim. We talked about those different karbanos. We discussed the fact that there is matzah being brought along with the karbanos here. What we did not discuss, although we alluded to several times, was the difference in how blood is applied from the karban, depending on what type of karban it is. And I mentioned to you last time that this first karban that was brought, which was a bull, and it is a chatas, a sin offering, and I mentioned to you last time that because of the way the blood is being dealt with, one who knows the rules about how blood is dealt with karbanos would already be able to know that this is a karban chatas, that this is a sin offering, even before the Torah says that it is a karban chatas, that it is a sin offering. So, I'd like to lead off tonight with a discussion of how the blood is handled with various karbanos. Now, in general, karbanos are only offered on the outside mizbeach. We know there are two altars. There's one outside in the courtyard, and there's one inside in the sanctuary. The one outside is made of or plated with copper, and the one inside is gold. We actually haven't even had the official instructions for how to construct the inside mizbeach yet. That's going to come up a little later in Parashat Tetzaveh. In general, the inside mizbeach, the one made of gold, is used almost exclusively for ketores, for burning incense, not for burning karbanos, not for sprinkling or pouring blood, although there are some exceptions, as we'll talk about soon. The outside mizbeach is used, it is the one that is used regularly. It's the one that's used every day in the Mishkan and in the Beis HaMikdash. It is used for burning fats and limbs of the karbanos. It is used for sprinkling blood. It is used for pouring blood. It's used for nisachim, for libations of water and of wine. Wine every day, water on Sukkos. The outside mizbeach is the one that gets the most use of all of the utensils in the Mishkan and in the Beis HaMikdash. The mizbeach, the outside mizbeach, has a demarcation line between the upper half and the lower half. We talked about this when we read about the construction of the mizbeach. We talked about how there is a band that goes around the mizbeach to indicate halfway from the bottom and halfway from the top. The mizbeach was tall, which means there was a ramp to go to the top. And it was also very wide, and Kohanim could and would walk to the very top of the Mizbeach and actually perform services on top of the Mizbeach. They would walk around. The fire of the Mizbeach was located in the very center of the Mizbeach. In the Beis HaMikdash, there were actually several fires. The area on the top of the Mizbeach was so large, it was like a big room, no walls, but like a big room, that's how large it was. And there were several different fires on top of the Mizbeach, which had different functions. The Kohanim would walk on top of the Mizbeach and do whatever it is they had to do up there. For a Kohen standing on the floor next to the Mizbeach, certainly in the Beis HaMikdash, he was dwarfed by the Mizbeach itself, which was much bigger than the average size of a man. In the Mishkan, we learned that there was a machlokas, there was a difference of opinion about how tall the Mizbeach was. But either way, one could stand on the floor of the Mishkan and be able to perform services next to the Mizbeach. Not on top, but next to it. The blood of a karbon is the main part of the karbon. We have a pasuk later on in the Chumash saying, Ki hadam hu hanafesh, the blood is the soul of the animal, the soul of the human being. Therefore, the way the blood is dealt with is the main part of the karbon. In fact, often the offering of the blood itself, the blood being put on the Mizbeach properly, was the difference whether or not the karbon was considered valid. Which means that even though there were many things that needed to be done with a karbon, after it was slaughtered, the blood had to be caught, the blood had to be taken to the altar, thrown on the altar, or put on the altar, we'll talk about how in a moment, the animal had to be cut into its various parts, it had to be skinned, some of the meat had to be burned, some of the meat had to be eaten, various things needed to be done, but if the blood was taken care of properly, even if everything else went awry, the karbon was considered to be, generally speaking, valid, because the blood was done properly. Whereas the other way around, if everything else was done properly, but the blood wasn't done properly, then the karbon would be considered no good. It would be considered pusel, invalid. So the blood was the main thing. It needed to be done properly for each karbon. What are your various choices for what to do with the blood, depending on the karbon? So, in a regular animal, whatever animal it was, a goat, a sheep, or a cow, the slaughtering was done. When the slaughtering, I'm sorry to get a little bit graphic over here, but if you've been to a slaughterhouse, you've seen this. If not, but when the animal is slaughtered, the blood comes out very quickly because of the carotid artery in the neck. And the blood comes out it doesn't just drip out, it comes out very, very fast. And the mitzvah was to catch the blood, which was not hard to do. It wasn't like you had to figure out where it's going to go. They knew where the blood was going to go. They catch the blood in a container. The container was a utensil of the Beis HaMikdash. And then to carry that blood in the container to the altar, to the Mizbeach. And then, once the Kohen got to the Mizbeach with the blood, then it depended on the karbon. So, for a karbon chatas, for a sin offering, the Kohen would actually ascend the ramp of the Mizbeach, assuming that the altar was very high and he wasn't able to reach the top standing on the floor, and he would actually dip his fingers in the blood and put blood from the cup, from the container onto his finger. He would then place the blood from his finger on each of the four corners or horns of the Mizbeach. He would go around. There's a specific method for which corner to do first, which one to do second, third, and fourth, and place a one placing of blood. He would dip his fingers, smear some blood. Dip his fingers, smear some blood, all the way around the Mizbeach, all four corners of the Mizbeach. That means that first of all, the main points over here are that the blood was on the upper part of the Mizbeach, not the lower part, and it was applied using his fingers. It wasn't thrown from the cup, it was actually applied using his fingers on the four corners. Plus, all four corners got an offering, got a dab of blood. That is the way a korban chatas, a sin offering, that's the way the blood was handled. Well, hold on. In contrast to that, a korban shlomim, a peace offering, and I believe a korban ola was the same thing, where it's totally burned, there, rather than the blood going on the top four corners of the mizbeach, the blood was placed on the lower part of the mizbeach, not the top part, and it was not done with the kohen's fingers, rather, the blood was actually thrown from the cup, from the utensil, onto the altar. Where was it thrown? Here the Mishnah tells us it was done shtayim shehein arba. It was two applications which are four, which means two which are four. Shtayim, two, shehein arba, which are four. What does that mean? That means that rather than place the blood on all four corners of the mizbeach, the blood was thrown so that the blood would strike the corner of the mizbeach. If the blood strikes the corner of the mizbeach, some of it will splatter to one side, some to the other side. So when hitting the corner, both sides that were hit would get it. So for example, if the blood was thrown at the southeast corner, then the south and the eastern walls of the mizbeach would get a little bit of blood. The kohen would then go around to the opposite corner. So if it was the southeast, he would then move to the northwest. If it was the northeast, he would move to the southwest and do the same thing, so that all four walls would get a little bit of blood, because the blood would hit the corner and move to each side that it hit. That was the way it was done for a shlamim, for a peace offering, and for an ola, for a burnt offering. So the differences between those and the chatas are that the blood is offered, first of all, from the floor, on the lower part of the mizbeach, not the upper part. Only two applications are made, not four. And it is not done with the fingers, it is done by throwing, making a throwing motion to get the blood to come out onto the walls, hitting the corner so it goes to both walls. In all cases, what happens to the leftover blood? There's still a lot of blood left in the container, in the utensil. So there, the very bottom of the mizbeach, at the very bottom, the lowest level, you know, we've talked about the mizbeach, the way the mizbeach was made, it was kind of, I don't want to say tapered, it was more like steps. The very top part was the narrowest part of the mizbeach, and as you moved lower down, it jutted out a little bit, and as you moved even lower down, it jutted out a little bit further until you got to the very bottom. The very base of the mizbeach was the widest part of the mizbeach. At the widest part, there was actually a trough that the blood that was left over would be poured into the Yesod HaMizbeach, the base of the Mizbeach, and from there it would be angled so that the blood would roll to a particular place, and then it would go into a hole, I guess, and it would go down there. There was a difference of opinion what would happen from that point on. Where would the blood go at that point? But it went down, away from everything else. That's the leftover blood. Now, there are some karbanos that only require one offering on the mizbeach, one application to the mizbeach, and it doesn't matter where it's done. As long as some of the blood gets on any wall of the mizbeach, the karban is valid. And the prime example of that would be the karban Pesach. The karban Pesach, which as we've talked about before, that Erev Pesach, you'd have the processing of thousands upon thousands of karbanos. There, it wasn't required. The karban Pesach doesn't require four applications. It doesn't require two applications, which are four. It doesn't require the use of anybody's fingers. It's just, you take the container, throw a little bit on the mizbeach, and you're done. You've fulfilled the proper mitzvah of the blood with the karban Pesach. The scene in the Beis HaMikdash on Erev Pesach, as we've described in the past, was extremely busy. All the Kohanim who were able to be of service were there, and they actually would form chains, human chains. And the Kohanim would line up from the area of the Shechita, of the slaughtering, to the Mizbeach, to the altar, several lines of Kohanim, and the Kohanim would spend their time, the ones who weren't actually slaughtering or catching the blood, they would spend their time taking a container, a full container of blood, from the kohen next to him, which was coming from the where the slaughtering was done, and handing it to the next kohen, who would take it and hand it to the next kohen, who would take it and hand it to the next kohen, until the kohen who was standing next to the altar, the kohen standing next to the altar would throw the blood against the altar, then turn around and hand the empty container back to the kohen next to him, who would then hand it back to the kohen next to him, back to the kohen next to him. So the kohanim were constantly exchanging full containers of blood for empty containers of blood. And that's what they were doing for that whole afternoon as the blood was being sent along the line to the altar and then back, the empty containers sent back, because they would run out of containers. So that it would be this constant process, several lines of kohanim doing this in the most busiest time of the year, where all those thousands of karbonos had to be processed in less than one afternoon. They started after midday and had to end before sunset. So it was a very pressured time. If you think your Erev Pesach is pressured, this was even more so, and this was the way it was done. But the reason why that was able to be done is because for the Karban Pesach, only one application is required on the altar, not four and not two, which are four. Now, all of this are karbonos that are processed on the outside Mizbeach, which is, as I said, the typical thing to do. There are some exceptions. There are few and far between. One of them that was very, very famous, as I'll talk to you about in a moment, where the blood is actually taken into the sanctuary, into the Heichal, and is processed on the inside Mizbeach. What would be an example of that? So the reason why we are familiar with this is because that is what was done on Yom Kippur. That was one of the exceptions. That would be called a Chatas Penimis, an inside Chatas. A Chatas is a sin offering. The par of Yom Kippur, the bull of Yom Kippur, was a Chatas Penimis, not a Chatas Chitzona, not a typical outside sin offering on the outside altar, but rather a Chatas Penimis, an inside sin offering. It was offered, it was slaughtered outside, the blood was caught outside, but then the blood was actually taken into the Kodesh, into the Heichal, into the sanctuary, where there is a specific process. The carbon of Yom Kippur is not the only carbon where that happens too. There are a few other exceptions to this rule where the blood is actually taken inside. For example, let's say the Sanhedrin, which is the highest court and therefore the highest, the final authority on what the Torah has to say for that generation is the Sanhedrin. What would happen if the Sanhedrin would rule about a law that all the Jews would follow and they ruled wrong? It was discovered later they made a mistake. And when they made the mistake, the Jewish people had already followed what they said and had done essentially the wrong thing. They'd all done an Avera. They'd all done sins. It was by accident, because nobody realized it, but it still was the wrong thing to do. In that case, the Sanhedrin has to offer a par halam davar. Par halam davar means a bull of a halam, means a halam means something which is hidden or missing or forgotten. Davar means thing. The bull of the forgotten or hidden thing, where there was a mistake that was made, they forgot something, and a mistake was made. That par halam davar follows the rule of the Yom Kippur par, where the blood is actually brought inside and is processed on the inside Mizbeach, on the inside altar. Now, this is a critical point which I'm going to make to you, because in order to appreciate what's going to happen here, you have to hear this difference. The rule of thumb is that a chatas, a sin offering, a typical chatas, a typical sin offering, in which the blood is processed on the outside Mizbeach, that's called a Chatas Chitzona, an outside sin offering, where the blood is put on the outside of Mizbeach, there, after the blood is put properly on the altar, then the animal is skinned, it is cut up into its particular parts, some of the fats and limbs are burned, and the rest are eaten by the Kohanim. It's not like an Ola, like a burnt offering where the entire thing is consumed. The Chatas, the sin offering, is eaten by the Kohanim. But a Chatas Penimis, a Chatas, a sin offering that the blood is processed inside, like the Yom Kippur offering, like the Par He'elam Dovra I just explained to you where the Sanhedrin made a mistake, those sin offerings are afterwards completely burned. They're not consumed at all. They are completely burned. Here, we're going to have, whatever the reason why I went through this whole thing with you, is we're about to have an example where it is straddling the fence. This is a sin offering, the one that is being offered by Aaron and his sons in their inaugural process. It is a sin offering that is a chatas chitsona, it's an outside chatas, in which the blood is processed outside, yet the entire thing is going to be burned, and none of it is going to get eaten. So it's going to, in some ways, be like a typical outside chatas, where everything is processed on the outside mizbeach, and in a certain way it's going to be like the inside sin offerings, chatas, in which the entire thing is burned. So here we have a hybrid. Again, since this is the first experience we have with a karban chatas, if you don't know the rest of the Torah, you don't realize this is a hybrid. You just assume, well, this is the way it's done. When you get to Parshas Vayikra and Parshas Tzav, you realize, hey, what we learned in Parshas Tetzaveh is actually not the way the karbanos are usually done. So here we have a hybrid, and I'm just giving you a heads up that that's what it is. I want to show you this in the psukim themselves. Please look at Pasuk Gidbeis, verse 12. We can start from, actually, Yodah from 11. V'shachat ta'as ha'par lifnei Hashem, you shall slaughter the par, the bull, in front of Hashem. Pesach ohel moed, in front of the tent of meeting, in front of the Mishkan. That's where you slaughter the bull. The Torah has not yet told us whether this bull is a chatas, is it an ola, we don't know what kind of carbon it is yet. V'lakachta midam ha'par, you shall take from the blood of the bull. V'nasata al kanos ha'mizbeach be'etzba'echa, you shall place it on the horns or corners of the mizbeach with your finger. V'es kol hadam, and the rest of the blood, tishpoch, you shall pour el yisod ha'mizbeach, at the base of the altar, as I described to you before. I mentioned to you last time, those who already know the laws of the blood would already know from reading this pasuk, this verse, that we're dealing with a chatas, with a sin offering, because the blood was put on the altar, all four corners, using his fingers. The pasuk, you give me verse 13. V'lakachta, you shall take. Now we're going to have a list. This is going to be a list of various fats. These fats are typical of all karbanos, in that they are not kosher and they need to be burned on the mizbeach. We're going to read it unless you really know what the inside of a cow looks like. And I have to tell you that 100 years ago, we would all know what the inside of a cow looks like. It was not unusual for everybody to be aware of it. But today, we are so far removed from the process of slaughtering of the cow, we pick it up when we go to the store and buy it in a wrapper, so we don't have no idea what these things are, but it was not so foreign to people as of 100 years ago. So you shall take from the eskolachelev and mechaseh, a care of all the fat that covers the stomach. You probably are aware that a cow has four stomachs, the carav is one of them. Ve'ez hayoseret ala kaved, and also that which is the fat that is on the liver. Ve'ez shtei akloyos, and the two kidneys. Ve'ez hachelev asher alehen, and the fat that is on them. V'hiktarta ha'mizbecha, and you shall burn all of that on the altar. This was typical of all karbanos. All karbanos, the fats were burned on the altar. That's the outside altar. Ves bisar hapar, and the flesh of the bull. Ves oro, and its hide. Ves pirsho, and its, how do they translate that?
Waste,
okay. That would be the intestines. Tisrof ba'eshu, shall burn in fire. Mi chutz la'machane, outside the camp. Chatos hu, this is a sin offering. And as Rashi tells us, I'll read you the Rashi just to emphasize the point. Rashi says, Lo matzinu chatas chitzona nisrefes. We do not find an outside sin offering, an outside chatas nisrefes that is totally burned. Ella ze, only this one. Ella zu, only this one. This is the only one, the only outside sin offering that is completely burned. So here we have a hybrid of chatas of sin offering where it is processed on the outside mizbeach, and yet after it's completely processed, it is completely burned. Tonight we are not going to discuss why, any of this. Not one answer to a why question. I ask you not to ask that question because we're not going to answer it tonight. We have to get down all of the what's before we get to the whys. And we're going to be on the what's for a little bit of time now, not just tonight, probably next week as well. We have to cover all of the what's before we can begin to discuss the whys. This is no question, since the 6 days of creation, this is, I would say, the most complicated part of the Torah that we have encountered. Because of the combination of the fact that it is so foreign to us, we've never seen this being done, because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, unfortunately, and because we even the clothing of the Beis HaMikdash, of the Kohen, which we don't have either, but we know what clothing is. We know what a jacket is. We know what a tunic is. We know what pants are. We don't know these things. It's so foreign to us. One has to have a working knowledge of karbonos to fully appreciate what's going on over here. So that's why there is a complexity here that we have to get down what is going on before we discuss all of the whys. But I am willing to take any questions about what is going on. Yes?
In the Midbar, there were times when they didn't stay in one place too long, but every stop, this had to be created?
The
whole dog and everything?
Yeah, well, remember that the Mizbeach was hollow. They would fill it with dirt. The Mizbeach was a hollow wooden mold, I guess, structure, plated with copper, and the middle was filled with dirt every time they stopped. So it was on a dirt area. I imagine they didn't need to dig a deep hole for each time they stopped because it would just be absorbed into the ground. In the Beis HaMikdash,
many Kohanim at that time.
Correct. In the Beis HaMikdash, it was a marble floor. So it's a much greater discussion what happened to the blood after it was poured onto the base of the Mizbeach. Where did it go? Yeah.
In verse 14, where it says its hide, is that, I thought you said when the animal got skin and...
Yes. Typically, the hide was not burned. Even a carbon ola, even a completely burnt offering, the hide was kept by the Kohanim. It's a gift to the Kohanim. Here, since this is considered to be not an ola, but a chatas, the entire thing was, nothing was kept. It was completely burned. There's not a remnant left.
One other question. So, the bull... You go ahead. You had a question?
Yeah, but you start. Go ahead.
Okay. So, the bull offering part of it was eaten by the Kohanim.
Not this one. This one was completely burned.
A sin offering
was normally eaten by the Kohanim.
So, does that mean that that's what they ate all day?
The Kohanim who were working that day, it depended on how many offerings were brought, how many Kohanim there were. Like was just mentioned, in their day there were very, very few Kohanim. Later, there were many more Kohanim.
Right.
So if you have 100 Kohanim working in the Beis HaMikdash and only 80 Karbanos are offered that day, there's less that needs to be eaten.
So did they stand to eat? Did they sit to eat?
No, they sat to eat. Not in the Beis. They would have to step...
Turns like on a, you know,
yeah, they would... Yeah. Yeah, they would step out of depending, we talked about this last time, that depending on the type of carbon, the holier carbonos, the kudshe kudshim, needed to be eaten in the courtyard of the Mishkan, or the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash.
Okay.
They had ovens there too.
The kachim kalim, the lesser, the less sanctified karbonos, could be eaten anywhere in Yerushalayim, the old city. Anywhere in Yerushalayim, so you could take, if you had a home in the old city, you could take it home. I mean, that was
you
also
take
from,
it home and cook it home.
Yeah, you could do that. You could do that when Jews came to visit for the Shalosh Regalim, for the three festivals. If you took a hotel room in the old city, then you could cook it and eat it there. But it had to stay in the old city, in Yerushalayim.
Okay. When you speak about throwing something, it suggests haphazard and disrespect. So when you say you throw the blood, it sounds like...
Yeah, it's definitely not as orderly as we might have expected, because think about a pail of water.
Or it doesn't say pour, you know, you could pour it out, you could guide it out.
Yeah, it says
throw.
It says that that's the word in the Torah, zorek. That's what it says, to throw. So you would kind of like this.
You know, the sin offering, get rid of it.
Well, and it's not only the peace offerings, also the shlamim, also.
Oh.
I mean, also, kind of like.
How far from the wall, onto the wall, was the Kohen?
He could stand close, but it's hard to. You can't have the utensil bang against the wall, so you need to stand a little bit further back so that you're able to.
He's not aiming for a target.
He's aiming for the corner.
Yeah, but he's right there.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
And
that's right.
White?
Yeah, so I mean, also, if you want to keep your clothes relatively clean, you step back. But we talked about this already, that a Kohen's job was a dirty job. It was not clean. It was, you got dirty. Your hands got dirty. Your feet got dirty. Remember, they were barefoot. Their feet got dirty in the blood. Their hands got dirty in the blood. Their clothing got dirty. It was you're working in a messy environment.
Must have been very impressionable.
I guess so. It depends on the person. Some people are affected by the blood of animals, and some people are not. My wife's grandfather was a sheikhet. He used to slaughter really birds for a living, and he used to do it all day long. And he used to faint at the sight of human blood. No kidding. Animal blood, bird blood didn't bother him at all, and human blood he would faint. So you know, people have different, you know.
I just wish we had the detergent they had back then to get blood out.
There's a discussion about what was used to get the blood out.
Yeah. What is the discussion?
Yeah, it's in the Mishnah. So it was used. Yeah.
Just when you were saying they could take the Kohen to take home certain sacrifices, you know, and cook it at home.
If it was in Yerushalayim itself.
Right.
Yeah.
But the family can't eat it.
So it depended. The ones that had to be eaten in the courtyard could only be eaten by the Kohanim. The ones that could be eaten, all of Yerushalayim, could be eaten by anybody.
Oh, okay.
So they could feed it to the families. They could invite over a guest. It could be it could be eaten around. Okay. Yeah.
What happens with leftovers? Like, do they have?
Okay. So leftovers, that's a big problem, because the halacha is that there's only a certain amount of time you can eat it. Mm-hmm. After that time, it becomes nosar. Nosar means leftovers, and that has to be burned. So the mitzvah is to eat it within the right amount of time. Now, if there were enough kohanim, then they could do it. If there weren't enough kohanim, then there would end up being leftovers. In this case, where it's only Aaron and his sons, there were four sons and Aaron. His two sons hadn't died yet. So the four sons and Aaron, it's five people, and each day they're going to have to make sure to finish all of whatever they need to eat. Now, it's not that much, as we'll see, because it's three karbonos and some loaves. Remember, the loaves were matzah. And we'll see that only of the three karbonos, two are going to be completely burned. Only one is going to need to be eaten. So each day of these 7 days, they're going to have to eat the entirety of the animal, the parts that they have to eat. Part of it still gets burned on the altar, and we'll see that even Moshe is going to have to eat some of it.
Yeah,
well, the bull was burned. It wasn't a bull, it was the isle, it was the ram that they're going to have to eat.
Ram.
Yeah, one ram, but it's every day. Some karbonos, you have the day that it's offered. Karbonos can only be offered during the day, not at night. So you have the day that it's offered, the following night, and the following day to eat it. For a grand total, theoretically, of 36 hours. If the carbon was offered bright and early in the morning, you've got until sunset the following day. That's for like a shlamim, for a peace offering. But for a chatas, for a sin offering, that you only had the day it was offered and the following night, and that's it. By morning it would have to be burned. Like, as we know, the carbon Pesach was like that. That's why the afikomen needs to be eaten, at least preferably, in time at chatzos, at midnight. Midnight, not only 12, I mean the middle of the night. The reason is because any mitzvah which its deadline is the morning, Chazal, our sages, said, needs to be finished by the middle of the night. Because Chazal were concerned, I think it's a very valid concern, they don't need my approval, but I think it's a very valid concern, that anything which its deadline is the morning, it's very easy to fall asleep, and that's it. Mm-hmm. That's why a man davening Ma'ariv, for example, the halacha is that it needs to be done prior to middle of the night. He should not wait until 4 in the morning to daven. Because what happens if he falls asleep and wakes up at 8 in the morning and it's all over? So it's got to be done earlier. So the karbanos had firm deadlines. They needed to be eaten by then. And anything which is not consumed needs to be burnt. That would be no sir.
Is there like some sort of aura that kept flies away?
Yes, there was a miracle in one of the constant miracles. So the 10 miracles that happened every day in the Beis HaMikdash was that there were no flies, which was an amazing thing, because there's blood everywhere, there's guts. I mean, it's not a clean place, and there were no flies. That was one of the miracles that took place.
Is there a minimal amount that the Kohen had to eat to validate the Kohen?
No, because as long as the blood was thrown, it was valid.
So if the Kohen wasn't eaten,
then it wasn't eaten. Now we're going to see later that the eating itself was part of the atonement, but the throwing of the blood is really what did it. Now what you're thinking about, though, is that the Karban Pesach, we each had a requirement to eat at least a kezias. Mm-hmm. Right. But that's not the Kohen. That when the Kohen also for their Karban Pesach, but each member of the Jewish people had to eat a kezias of the Karban Pesach. You could not be a vegetarian all year round in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. We're going to have to stop for tonight.
Thank you.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.